couple of weeks ago on this show, Brooke misstated the name of a terminally ill man whose doctor-assisted suicide was aired on British television. His name was Craig Ewart, not Chris Ewart. We regret the error. Of course, it wasn't the first mistake we made this year at On the Media, and judging from the 2008 roundup of regrettheerror.com, we had plenty of company. Craig Silverman is editor of the website and author of Regret the Error, How Media Mistakes Pollute the Press and Imperil Free Speech. He joins us every year at this time to catalog journalism's most egregious blunders of the previous 12 months, some accidental, some not so much. Craig, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You begin this year with the trend of the year, so why don't we?
I called it epic organizational failure. It's very common to see a single journalist go rogue. They plagiarize, they fabricate. But in this case, there were three examples of actual entire organizations that really completely fell off the wagon. You have a website in Japan that was the website of a daily newspaper there that had to basically be shut down and restarted because they were all the time publishing completely scandalous false articles, usually about the sexual proclivities of Japanese people. Then you have the Express newspapers chain in England, who had to publish a series of major front page apologies because they had done some really inaccurate and damaging reporting about a British family. And then the last one was stateside. You had a weekly paper in Texas called The Bulletin that was actually practicing plagiarism as pretty much a standard operating procedure. And that one was revealed by Jody Rosen at Slate.
Now, that's plagiarism on kind of institutional scale. There were still a couple of outbreaks of ad hoc plagiarism. Two, curiously, from the same author, Rick Riley, now of ESPN.com and ESPN Magazine, previously of Sports Illustrated. It happened to him not once but twice, not as perpetrator but as victim.
Apparently, you can understand now why he was hired by ESPN for such a huge amount of money, because his work is so good that people can't keep their hands off of it.
But the most bizarre aspect of this is not so much the plagiarism, but the confession, which is just simply delicious.
That's right. I'm calling this the accuracy quote of the year. One of the people who was guilty, his name is Dave Pratt. He's better known as a radio host in Vancouver, but he was writing a column for a Vancouver newspaper. And so when he was tracked down by the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation to ask him why he had done this, he said, quote, "It was Saturday and I wanted to get out before noon."
Well, that's the explanation. Sorry for robbing the bank, Your Honor, but I wanted money.
You got to love the brutal honesty of it, I guess.
Okay, but maybe that's the confession of the year. It's not the correction of the year. That you award to humorous Dave Barry. What was the error and what was the correction?
This correction has a few names that are extremely hard to pronounce. I'm going to take a shot at it now, but the background is Dave Barry had written a column in the Miami Herald about the Olympics. He had an error in the column, and this is a correction that he published in the next day's column. "In yesterday's column about badminton, I misspelled the name of Guatemalan player Kevin Corden. I apologize. In my defense, I want to note that in the same column, I correctly spelled Prapawadi Jerome Ratanatarak, Pumpat Sapkul Chananart, and Porntip Baranup Ratsayatsuk. So by the time I got to Kevin Corden, my fingers were exhausted."
Okay, so that's kind of a goofy correction. Some were serious indeed. And you award your error of the year to the LA Times for reporting it did on an attack a decade ago of rapper Tupac Shakur. The reporting suggested that Sean Puffy Combs was involved.
The story was published in March. It was a story that took about 6 months of reporting to produce, and it was written by a Pulitzer Prize winner, Chuck Phillips. The story suggested, as you mentioned, that Sean Combs, some of his associates, were the ones behind this attack. It suggested that he knew about it, and the story relied on what were claimed to be FBI documents and that were provided to the reporter by a man named James Sabatino, who was an inmate. And the Smoking Gun just dug into this, and they said, look, Sabatino is a well-known con artist, and they looked at the documents, and they concluded very easily, it seemed, that they were all forged. And so the Times, on March 27th, just the day after the Smoking Gun report, apologized, and then on April 7th, not too long after, they actually issued a formal retraction.
What lessons do we learn from this incident?
you know, this is one thing journalists struggle with all the time, that we have to go into something and try to maintain our skepticism and try to be critical about the things that are being given to us, even if we really want them to be true or we know that there'll be a big story. And it's a very difficult thing for a journalist to do, to keep that distance. And in this case, I think it was one of the reasons why the Times story ended up getting published and why they didn't see that these documents were so troublesome.
So you look at corrections, you look at apologies, you look at errors, you look at ethical blunders, and you also look at typos, a couple of which caught your eye in 2008. Can you share them?
I think a lot of journalists would agree that the typo of the year is the kind of mistake that is really one of the most embarrassing possible. And I say that because back in the summer, a newspaper that is distributed in Vermont and New Hampshire actually managed to spell its own name wrong on the front page.
Oops.
Yeah, so let's get their name out there. This is the Valley News, and they misspelled it by putting an extra S.
Now, sometimes publications get kind of ensnared by their own style book. Tell me about the case of the Sprinter.
This was a pretty remarkable one. There's a website called One News Now. It's operated by the right-leaning American Family Association. And they have a standard practice in their style book that the word homosexual is inserted whenever there's the use of the word gay. And they've actually gone to the point where they have an automatic filter. So any story that comes in and they use some of the wire services automatically goes from gay to homosexual. Now, this really served them poorly when a gentleman by the name of Tyson Gay was running at the Olympic track and field trials for the United States. The result was a headline that read, "Homosexual eases into 100 final at Olympic trials." It just got better from there. The story reported that on Saturday, homosexual misjudged the finish in his opening heat. It also reported that, asked how he felt, homosexual said, "a little fatigued."
Oh, man. I have nothing I can add to that. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Craig Silverman is author of Regret the Error, How Media Mistakes Pollute the Press and Imperil Free Speech.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.